Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, it's Monday, January 10th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. Our main guest, none other than John Bailey. He's the White Plains Citizenet reporter, publisher, and editor. He's already on the line. Good morning, John. How are you, sir?
Good morning, world.
Well, that's a great introduction. I never thought of saying that, but it only takes someone like you
to
do that. Which
it's
is
an
real...
old opening. I stole it from William B. Williams, I believe.
Really?
All yeah.
right. Not bad at
I
all.
I think it was him.
Well, well, you know, you've been covering this whole issue with regard to the crisis we're going through from a medical perspective. We had the Delta variant, then we had Omicron, and now all of a sudden there's a discovery on the island of Cyprus. They've discovered a new strain of the coronavirus mm-hmm. that combines the Delta variant with the Omicron variant, and they're now calling it the Deltacron. But we don't know if it's really how fast it will consume people around the world. If it's mm-hmm. like Omicron, that's all we need. We're practically exhausted because of Omicron. So how do you tie all this together? And again, with so many people, as you point out in your on the White Plains Citizenet Reporter, the daily case count is over 900,000 infected, and yet more people are not getting inoculated. I don't get it. I still can't figure it out.
Well, look, the situation is simply there is a vast membership of America that feels that America does not have the right to tell them what to do. They feel it's an infringement on their freedom.
Understand.
And this is an idealistic thing. Yeah.
So it's a position, but so when does one, I don't know if one loses their freedom if one gets inoculated, because if they get infected, is it the responsibility of the rest of the nation to pay for these people's medical bills? You know, the number of hospitals, they can't even keep up with the people who are coming in. If you need to get some sort of surgery, and they think it's elective surgery, or they're going to tell you it's elective, you have to wait your turn. What about those people? They have a right to go to a hospital? They're paying for it.
Well, that's what's going to be happening in Westchester County in about 2 weeks, because at the present, this week, we are probably going to go over the 28,000 new infections, because right now we have 20,000 through the 6th. And so if we got ones 4 and 4 and 8, there you are, 28,000. We're averaging 4,000 new infections a day for 6 days. And
it's amazing.
When you take a look at the hospitalizations, which were, it was 224 last week,
mm-hmm.
on Monday. So we'll see what Mr. Latimer says today in his COVID briefing. But it's not going to be pleasant, because I believe that 244 is going to go up over 300, and that's going to be start pushing up on our hospital bed count here in Westchester. But at that rate, it'll be about 2,000 hospitalized within about 2 weeks.
Which
pushes up against our beds, which is 2,700. And I mean, this is the wrong way to look at things. Just because you're under it doesn't mean you're not going to reach it at the present infection rate.
Well,
if you're under your bed count, It's not positive. Mm-hmm. If you're exponentially exploding in infections, that might be hospitalized.
Well, that's going to be a major problem. And even though we make believe or we say that the Omicron virus or the variant is not as detrimental to your physical well-being, as it's easier to overcome somehow, we don't really know what the ramifications are. How long has it been in the ether? I mean, we haven't even waited 3 months since we found out about it, or is it maybe even 4 months? We don't know what the effects are going to be about that in the long term.
Well, the effects of the getting COVID and surviving it are lingering. And this, we haven't received enough publicity from the CDC on this. Maya Gay addressed people in White Plains at the White Plains Library through Zoom about how she, as a person in their early 30s, got COVID, but still is suffering from it from a mental standpoint and from and this is really frightening because that's a young person who was in great health. And
The CDC equivocates with the use of the language as if they are deficient in vocabulary, which they evidently seem to be. And it's very difficult to really comprehend what they're saying because they're not being exact. Maybe they need to use one word and then another word and a third word and a tenth word so that people can comprehend. And we need to be told that, hey, even if you're not infected, you've got to protect yourself. You've got to wear a mask. The mask is not as protecting as an inoculation.
Mm-hmm.
And are we going to find out that half the country, the ones that believe that they have a right to whatever freedoms they believe they have a right to, what do we do when they die? Do we say, well, he believed or she believed that they had a right to not be inoculated. Now they're dead. Well, that's wonderful. Is that what we want? I don't want to lose these people.
Well,
I don't know.
It's having a long-term effect because we are not going to have enough workers to go back at full strength at this rate.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. I only noticed yesterday that in California, I think it was reported on KCBS, that's out in San Francisco, they don't have enough people working in the hotel business, so they now have a machine that cleans up your room. A machine.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah. And
there it is.
Yes.
So the question now becomes, if you no longer need to employ people in hospitality because they're sick or they don't want to work or they can't work or whatever the issue is, and now we're going to have machines, what are we going to do about all the people that wanted to work, couldn't get a job, blah, 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 or got sick, and now that we have machines, how are we going to keep people in food and money and housing?
Yes, automation has its drawbacks. Number one is it's cheaper. It is cheaper to pay a robot. You don't have to pay them hospitalization benefits. You don't have to pay them health care, pay for their health care, and your expenses go down. But what happens is you're putting people out on the street, no way to make a living. And this is what basically happened in the Detroit area when they automated the assembly lines. You needed less people.
Right.
And Detroit gradually fell into decline. And then what did those wonderful automakers do? They had parts brought in from overseas. They had had cars manufactured abroad. Much cheaper labor. And
yeah, but
this
we
is what corporations do.
That either.
Yes. No.
Well, the corporations
let alone
do,
tax-free
do
profits from over there.
The corporations do it, but it's the government that permits it because we gave them incentive to go abroad to market cheaper because we want to make believe that if we import the stuff from China or wherever, where it be Vietnam, that's supposed to help our relations, but it doesn't because now, for example, if you need a chip for your GM car, they don't have the chip. And can you imagine, all of a sudden, these brainchilds of big business, they realize now they have to produce here. Oh, my God, what a revelation. Oh, well, so now you don't have to worry about whether they produce the chips in China, because even if they produce it in China, and that's what we need, and we can't get them because the shipping can't get here. Isn't that unbelievable? I mean, what are these people, stupid?
A lack of planning.
Millions of dollars.
Lack of planning. And in other words, these shortages have been developing over the last year. But they had no emergency plan. They didn't stockpile. They didn't stockpile because they only buy what they need, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if I was in the midst of a pandemic, and we've been in the midst of it for 2 years, please, could we make an adjustment after year one instead of believing the claptrap that came out of Washington and, of course, New York State's State House, whereby everybody wanted to open up and get our economy back together so nobody in Albany would be blamed for the economy not coming back.
Yeah.
The only reason they did
it's
it, there was no reason. It was insane. They don't think up there. We don't have the brightest people running our state governments, and that has been proven in spades over the last 2 years.
I wanted to ask you about something else that somehow has come about because of this crisis that we're going through. Food chains have been one of the first to be disrupted by the new super strain, and workers are falling ill. Productivity has dropped. Some supermarkets are reporting incidents of bare shelves, and they fear there's a growing imminent shortage of meat and eggs. What the hell's going on? What are we buying?
Well, number one, you're not going to miss meat. You're not going to miss meat. It's bad for you. It's just that you're in the habit of eating it. And number two, the eggs, I mean, they're not too good for you either. They're mainly for baking. So
the cholesterol. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so what happens here is the products that we are consuming mostly at the supermarket, but the vast number of Americans eat meat and dairy products, they're going to be affected. And on the other hand, I have not seen a dearth of supply here in White Plains, but let's face it, this is a wealthy county. And so they're not going to let the wealthy starve, okay? It's basically the wealthiest county in the country. And you know, I would say that years ago I worked for a client that made survival food. It was dehydrated food that you could cook it up with water, and it would be nutritious. It was called Sam Andy Foods, and I don't know if Sam Andy still exists, but it did a tremendous business back in the late 90s, playing on the 2K fears. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
When the turn of the century, 20 years ago, I mean, it seems like yesterday, okay, but it's 20 years ago. And he did an enormous amount of business of people buying up that actually believed that when the computers changed, everything was going haywire. It's one of the biggest frauds.
I remember that.
Ever.
Yes.
And nobody ever held any tech person to account for that.
None at all. And yet it costs a fortune
millions
and millions of dollars of productivity loss and scare people, and nobody ever paid for it.
But now, today, we have a real 2K. It's CK.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's COVID K. And what COVID has done, it is doing all the disruption that was predicted at the turn of the century. It's an interesting parallel.
Mm-hmm.
Because what are we seeing? We're seeing massive computer fraud, massive telephone scams, getting
mm-hmm.
identity, making identity thefts. We're seeing disruption
yeah.
of payments. And who knows what the deceitful Russian bear is planning for us through the last 2 years of the Biden term. And we have a president and a congressional majority that cannot seem to deal with this problem.
No.
I mean, you
so
can't
true.
Go railing about how bad Trump is like Biden did last week and that he was going to do this and that and that. And you can't draw lines in the sand with Russia if you're not going to do something. Now he said he was.
Well, I don't think that we're going. I don't think we have the capacity to do anything. Even God forbid,
we're a very weak country.
Russia
right now.
Decides to invade in Ukraine. We're
Russian
negotiating with them. We haven't gotten anywhere.
Yeah, Russian. Don't you think Russia needs a distraction? You know,
well, they did. They had that problem with in the southern plains of I forgot the name of the country now. There was just an insurrection that went on there.
Who knows?
Yeah, that's right, Kazakhstan. And,
that was a coup attempt.
Yeah, it was a coup attempt.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're smart too.
Well, no, it's just that I have a lot of this information floating in my head. Sometimes it, like sewage, it comes to the surface and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, that's my problem, too. Every now and then I forget.
But, you know,
so
much. We have a buffet of hell to sort through today. That's what we have. And if people don't realize that, I feel sorry for them, because the only thing to really keep yourself safe is get that vaccination and don't make it easy on the disease to get you.
Mm. Well,
and
I
not only
fathom,
that, but,
I don't think from a medical condition, I think people believe that they have a right not to be inoculated if they so choose. And at this point, we're not going to change that. It's a political decision. It's a belief that no one's going to tread on them, and that's the way they think, and that's it. But what are they going to do when the hospitals fill up and there's no more room? What are you going to do when you need to get hospitalization and they tell you that it's elective surgery and you can't get it? You have to wait. You have to suffer in case you need a knee and you can barely walk. Tough. Tough. That's what they're going to say. It's just tough. We don't have the room for you.
Yeah, and they're running out of medical personnel.
The nursing homes.
They're burning out. I mean, just about a month ago, Susan Fox, the president of Montefiore White Plains Hospital, said that, let's face it, we're really burned out here, and but our number of patients is way down. Very few people in there because of COVID. Now, I wonder what it's like now, because White Plains is getting infections at about 240 a day.
Well, they're getting infections all over the county.
Yeah,
right. And the bottom line,
Yonkers
is
over 12,000, I believe, has he?
I think so.
I mean, that's
ridiculous.
We're
not talking about it. You know, I want you to, you know what's ridiculous? What's ridiculous is that this particular government is not telling us how many police are infected, because they are. That's why they're not on the road. They sit in their stupid cars, they get paid, and they're infecting one another. And they just sit there. They don't go anywhere. They're not going after anything because they're infected. And we have people when they never check the kids, and they never force them to be inoculated or to get tested. And the same thing with the teachers. I don't know what they're doing in White Plains, but the teachers aren't always inoculated. And
well,
I don't know. And we make believe we're going to open up the schools. They never disinfected our schools in Yonkers. I don't know what they did in White Plains.
That's the largest school district in the county.
Which one? Oh,
Yonkers, right? Yeah, gotta be.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
it's gotta be. We got 23,000 kids in our school.
Yeah, well, right now White Plains infections are going at 2%. 2% of the 8,400 population we have, students, teachers, administrators, assistants, whatever. So we're a little bit ahead of last year's pace. So, you know, it is spreading, and now we're...
But at least you get figures. At least you get figures. We don't get any figures.
Well, you... Well,
we don't
wait.
Get any figures.
Okay, you should be able to get them off the New York State COVID school report tracker.
No, I
That's
know
the,
that. However, yeah, I do get that. However, we're not getting an analysis from our local government, which is
what they should do.
They should publish it.
Absolutely.
They're not doing it.
Well, why?
And we're not getting the analysis either from the county.
Yeah,
and they
or the media, other than us, you know.
What media? Who's covering it?
Well,
who's covering
it?
You know anybody else who's covering it other than you?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
Okay, well, there you go. So
I mean, the New York Times,
they're not doing it.
It's the New York Times, correct? Well, they just cover the national picture.
New York.
Yes. Right. They do not really dig into Queens. They don't dig into Brooklyn. They don't tell us why is it spreading so much. They don't write anything about the Nassau-Suffolk spread.
No.
Which is fuel.
Not at all.
No, they don't. That's an outrageous dereliction of editing.
It's, you know what? They probably feel, I don't know what their intentions are, but they're dropping the ball. They're not being relevant. They're not telling people what's going on. And I think that feeds the lack of decorum on people who say, well, I have a right to do what I'm doing, but you also have a responsibility to get inoculated so you don't infect other people. Hey, Ocasio-Cortez, she's got a big mouth. She's infected. You know how many other people are infected? And they don't say a word. They make believe. And you know what? So many people who do get infected, they feel so bad about it. They're embarrassed to tell people they're infected. And everybody thinks, oh, they're sequestering themselves.
And political gatherings are what's causing those infections among our leaders. They go in and they take off their masks. And they just don't do a smart thing, you know?
No, they don't.
I mean, they're dropping like flies.
Hey, you know what? We also made believe that, remember those very thin, flimsy face masks that came from China?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't protect you from anything. Those are the type of masks that I was familiar with from many, many, many years ago. I'm now in my 70s. I remember because I had traveled around the world, certainly in my 30s and 40s and 50s, a great deal. I was in Turkey, and the pollution from the coal was so thick that you could see it in the air. It was like a cloud of this darkness, and people were wearing masks in order to be able to breathe because it was unbelievable. And you found it in other parts of Asia as well, and in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is, this is the sort of stuff that's going on, And but the masks were of no value. We never said, hey, this is a waste of time and money. It doesn't protect you. And then
no.
Remember when they used to say, well, you know, you could wear a little thing, you know, I don't know, wear a shawl over your face. Give me a break. This doesn't protect you from anything. You know, we've been delinquent on so many levels here. And I really blame at the end the people at the CDC because their language is
and they keep changing things every couple of days.
Oh God!
You have to
stay. Remember when
it was 14 message.
Days to be sequestered?
Yeah.
Then it was for 10 days. Then it's for 5. Oh, give me a break.
Yeah. Well, how can? Well, but you raise a good point. Why are we allowing just sequestering now for 4 days when the epidemic is spreading so fast? After people get in touch with people who have COVID. Why are they doing that?
I don't get it.
I think you got to keep it at 14.
I think so. I don't see what the problem is.
It's a state of reason.
Where are they rushing to go?
Yeah, it's a state of reason.
Going?
Yes.
Yeah.
How can it be less infectious when it's getting more infectious?
Well, the numbers prove it's more
Riddle
infectious,
me that,
right?
CDC. Yes.
Maybe they don't get the reports at the CDC. I have no idea. I hope I don't
It's right there in front of their eyes every day. Yeah, it's right there in front of their eyes every day that it is not slowing. If it is not slowing, then you can't be having less quarantines.
Correct. Correct.
You can slow it.
Well, you know what? There is. You know, they just tell you to quarantine. How do we know that anybody's quarantining? Do you know?
No,
I
really don't. Nobody
Where
checks
are they quarantining?
Out. The tracing, I think, is broken down.
Oh, absolutely.
It was much better in the summer.
I don't know how long.
Yeah.
You got
yeah.
it.
And nobody talks about that.
Well.
What bothers me most is we have this afternoon, Mr. Latimer, the county executive of Westchester County, will appear
mm-hmm.
with the mayor of White Plains, Tom Roach,
mm-hmm.
and I will be really interested to see what they have to say, because Mr. Roach's city, where I live, was pretty good at controlling the epidemic, and our citizens were pretty good, and but now we're through the roof. Again, highest level ever we've had. I think it's over 200 a day now, if not
yes.
more. I mean, see, with this two-day lag, with this lack of transparency as far as with a two-day lag, it really gives the state lots of talking room. You know what I'm saying? They can talk about it without, a lot of talking and maneuvering, and, you know, for weeks now, the county executive and the county government has said you really need to do this and do this, but no city that I know of in Westchester County is actually enforcing things.
No, they're not.
They're
I don't
not.
Know why.
So
if
you're not
going to
enforce, people will ignore.
Who are we expecting to pick up the ball? That's the thing I don't get. Are we
They're crossing their
by
fingers.
This crisis? Yeah, well, it's
the
not working.
The state is crossing its fingers. Now, Hochul, it really is putting out basically the same information with now more detail on hospitalizations than Mr. Cuomo, her disgraced predecessor, ever did.
Mm-hmm.
And however, she isn't changing the message sufficiently enough every day. Her press releases always say the same thing, but of course, new statistics. So I think that's a little bit of a weakness.
Correct.
And because I look at the end, it's always, you have to get vaccinated. You have to get vaccinated.
I think that they need to invest more time and they must think it out a little bit better, so that it does connect better with people, because it seems too antiseptic and people gloss over it very quickly. I know I've been posting it, but I don't think it's effective. And to be honest with you, if I would spend the whole day doing it, you know, then at the end of the day, we can't report about anything else. And, you know, I have to leave that to that job to the county and the state, but they're falling on the job. It's too complex.
They have to rule. If I was handling the New York City area, which the governor can do, I would say that there will be no commuting in New York from Nassau and Suffolk counties. I would just do that. In other words, ban all commutation into New York City, because New York City was behind Westchester County in new cases for about 6 weeks. Nassau and Suffolk were really ramping up with the most cases in the state. And no one talked about that or did anything about it, because those Nassau and Suffolk counties are Republican supervisors who have done a terrible thing. And right now, I would bet that the hospitals in Nassau and Suffolk County are overloaded.
I'm sure they are.
But we haven't heard that, have we?
No, but the numbers seem to prove that they probably are inundated. And we are too. In further north, beyond us, little bit further up, and certainly the northern part of the state, they have no room.
So much misery.
There's no room. That's unbelievable. Well, maybe one of these days we're going to be able to realize when there'll be a waiting line to get into the morgue, what's going to happen. I have no idea what's going to, you know, wake us up. Anyway,
well,
John,
the other thing is, how
pleasure.
Fast do they recover when they get hospitalized? How fast do they recover? Do they require more hospitalization or less? Because they're unvaccinated, 90% of them, according to the governor. And the unvaccinated have caused this, caused this fourth wave, a fifth wave. And it's on them. And
yeah, but
I'm,
they're not going to take responsibility. They're happy.
No,
because
if they were responsible, they would have gotten vaccinated.
Exactly.
Look at Aaron Rodgers being allowed to play in the Super Bowl when he lied about being vaccinated. I mean, the Green Bay Packer quarterback. And Roger Goodell does not have the cojones to suspend Mr. Rodgers from playing in the NFL indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he should have done. Same thing with the Nets allowing Kyrie Irving unvaccinated to come back to the team. Corporations what they do to make their money. That's what they do.
Well, you remember Djokovic, you know, he was supposed to go to Australia. He claimed that he was infected and he's over it. But they throw him out of the country. They say, no, sorry, you can't do it. Maybe you're the guy that should be in the tennis bout, you know, but it's tough.
They said a very good thing. They said tennis means nothing, but you're not going to affect you're not going to infect other players.
Correct.
In fact, football means nothing. It means nothing.
Exactly.
The fact that they care so little for their players that they have tried to really cover up this concussion syndrome that has killed a lot of ball players that play football. And, you know, I thought that shows you how immoral the NFL is. It's basically Roman gladiators in pads is what it is.
Yeah. It's so true.
It's a terrible sport.
It's very, very bad. Listen, John, we've got to get going. So you have a great week. Thanks again for your input, as always. You take care of yourself.
Yeah,
stay healthy.
I'm trying to be more Eric Severide-y.
Hey, you're doing good.
Thank you, Walter.
Oh, better looking, though. Better looking, though. Take care, John. All the best.
Yeah,
even
the greats. Bye for now. Be safe, everybody.
Take care. Bye. You too. Well, there's John Bailey. He's the White Plains Citizenet reporter, publisher, and editor. You could find him and the work that he does at the WPCNR.com website. So WPCNR.com website, for which stands for White Plains Citizenet Reporter.com, and that's where it's at. Let me just quickly check. I've got to look this up. Not quite sure. Hopefully I could find this. I'm going to try to see if I can get a hold of Mr. Edelman. There might be a problem at his end, unless it's at my end. And let me see. Okay. Yeah. Here it is, because evidently he hasn't called in, so let's see if we can get a hold of him. Bear with me a moment here. See if he's ringing. Bear with me a second as I try to reach out to him. Sorry for the delay. Just make sure the number's right. Okay, let's see if this works, and hopefully we'll be able to get him. And that he's okay. Oh, 1 second. I don't think that's dialing yet. Bear with me a moment. Okay. Now it should be dialing, I think. Yes.
You've reached Mike. Please leave a message.
Good morning, Mike. It's about 10:35 or so. Didn't hear from you, so maybe you're not able to do anything, or maybe your phones are not working. So if you do have a chance, give us a call. If not, just all the best. I'll check with you after 12. The number here is 347-205-9201. So 347-205-9201 to call the radio show if you got the time. If not, just all the best, and I'll check up with you after 12. Take care. So thank you. Okay, so that's Michael Edelman. So there's a problem evidently of some sort. I'm not quite sure what it is. And so what we're going to do at this point, bear with me a second here, we're not going to be able to speak to Ron Matten, who we're going to talk to at 11 o'clock. So in the meantime, we've got a little bit of time. And so I'm going to move on to something else. Bear with me a second here. 1 second. One moment here. Oh, I know what I want to do. Sorry, I was not prepared for this. And so I'm a little bit behind the eight ball here. So bear with me another moment. Forgive me. And okay. All right, let's just see where we are here. Oh, 1 second. Let's find out what they're doing over at the at the Supreme Court. It seems that the court is poised to block vaccine or test policy for workplaces, but they may allow vaccine mandate for healthcare workers, which is where things seem to be going. So the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on Friday, two sets of challenges to the Biden administration's authority to combat the COVID-19 pandemic. So for over 2 hours of debate, the justices were skeptical of the administration's attempt to impose a vaccine or test mandate for workers at large employers. In the second case, which lasted for roughly an hour and a half, actually, the justices were more receptive to the administration's effort. to impose a vaccine mandate for healthcare workers at facilities that receive federal funding. In both cases, came to the Supreme Court last month on an emergency basis, and in an unusual move, the justices opted to fast-track the cases for oral argument on the question whether the mandates can remain in place while challenges to their legality continue in the lower courts. So even beyond the subject matter of the arguments themselves, the specter of COVID-19 loomed over the courtroom from the outset when eight justices took the bench, all but one of them, Justice Neil Gorsuch, wore masks. That was a sharp departure from prior in-person arguments during the pandemic when Justice Sonia Sotomayor has been the only justice wearing a mask. Sotomayor, who has lifelong diabetes that puts her at high risk from COVID-19, did not take the bench at all. She instead opted to participate in Friday's arguments remotely. In addition, for the first time since the court's return to in-person arguments, two of the six lawyers participated by phone. According to Reuters, Ohio Solicitor General Benjamin Flowers contracted COVID-19 after Christmas, while Louisiana Solicitor General Elizabeth Merrill argued remotely, quote, in accordance with COVID protocols, end quote, which require arguing attorneys who test positive for COVID to argue by telephone. Well, then we got the OSHA case. The first case, National Federation of Independent Business versus the Department of Labor, centers on the vaccine or test mandate issued by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which is OSHA. It requires all employers with 100 or more employees, roughly two-thirds of the private sector, to compel those employees to either be fully vaccinated against COVID-19 or be tested weekly and wear masks at work. Representing the business groups, lawyer Scott Keller warned that allowing the mandate to remain in place would cause a massive economic shift, resulting in billions upon billions of non-recoverable costs for businesses. And if Congress intended to give OSHA the power to combat COVID-19 by imposing rules like the vaccine or test mandate, he told the justices it needed to do so clearly. The question, Keller emphasized, is not what the United States is going to do about COVID-19, but instead who is going to decide what to do. So for Justice Elena Kagan, the answer to the question was simple. With a complicated balancing of public health and economic trade-offs, she suggested administrative agencies who have expertise in the area and the areas that they regulate and are politically accountable should make the decision rather than unelected judges. Well, but Justice Chief John Roberts says or saw things differently. He suggested that Congress had not specifically given OSHA the power to vaccine or test mandate, and indeed, OSHA had never mandated vaccines before. It might be more appropriate for individual states to impose such a mandate, or Congress. It's hard to argue, he told the Solicitor General, Elizabeth Preliger, I don't know how to pronounce her name, that a law passed by Congress 50 years ago, giving OSHA general powers, gives the agency, quote, free rein, quote, unquote, to issue a policy of this magnitude. Well, Justice Samuel Alito was also dubious, describing OSHA's interpretation as squeezing an elephant into a mouse hole. The vaccine or test mandate, he said, is, quote, fundamentally different, end quote, from anything that OSHA had done before. Indeed, he noted, most OSHA regulations apply only while workers are on the job, but a vaccination is permanent. Now, in both cases, Justice Stephen Breyer voiced strong support for allowing the Biden administration to enforce the mandates while litigation continues. He repeatedly invoked statistics showing that the number of nationwide COVID-19 cases driven by the highly contagious Omicron variant is, at an all-time high. The U.S. is now averaging more than 500,000 cases per day, far higher than when OSHA first issued the vaccine or test mandate, and which Breyer noted, and then hospitals are nearly full with patients who are not vaccinated, he added. And one of the factors that the court considers in deciding whether to grant the challenger's request to put the mandate on hold is whether it is in the public interest to do so, he observed. And with the tidal wave of recent COVID-19 cases, Breyer told Keller, I would find that unbelievable. Let me go back to our studio screen. So evidently, Mr. Edelman is not going to be able to join us today. He's a national political analyst and pundit that we speak to every Monday morning from 10:30 to 11. So there must be a reason he can't reach us, maybe a phone problem, who knows. So let's go back to what they're saying at the Supreme Court. Well, then there we have an issue about the healthcare vaccine case. In the second case, Biden versus Missouri, the justices are considering whether the Biden administration can enforce nationwide a rule that requires all health care workers at facilities that participate in the Medicare and Medicaid program to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19 unless they qualify for a medical or religious exemption. Now, the Department of Health and Human Services issued the rule, which applies to more than 10 million workers, and that was back in November. Representing the Biden administration, Deputy Solicitor General Brian Fletcher told the justices that requiring health care workers to be vaccinated, quote, falls squarely within Health and Human Services statutory authority. Sotomayor chimed in that the vaccine mandate for health care workers was also a valid exercise of the government's power under the Constitution's spending clause, which allows the federal government to impose conditions on the funds that it gives out. Alito was skeptical, however, asking Fletcher whether the states had clear notice that by taking funds from Medicare and Medicaid, they would later be subject to the vaccine requirement, but Roberts appeared to be more convinced. Quote, you signed the contract, he told Jesus Osete, the Missouri Deputy Solicitor General representing one set of challengers, and he later reminded Murrow that states had agreed to a broad provision that allowed the Department of Health and Human Services to impose requirements for the health and safety of patients. Osete emphasized that if the Biden administration were allowed to enforce the mandate nationwide, quote, rural America will face an imminent crisis, end quote, as healthcare workers would have to choose between losing their jobs and complying with a mandate. Kagan pushed back against that argument, telling Osete that the Health and Human Services had taken that possibility into account before issuing the mandate. Although some people might quit, she conceded, other employees might return to the workplace because they would feel safer with the mandate in place, and fewer people might be out sick. Moreover, she added that some people are not going to hospitals because they are afraid of getting COVID there. Health and Human Services, she stressed, has to balance all of these concerns. Quote, I don't know very much about rural hospitals, Kagan acknowledged, but the Secretary of Health and Human Services, she observed, that's his job. Well, so that's the case. And just so you know, this article was originally published at How on the Court on January 7th, so I had an opportunity to give this to you at the moment. Now let's go back to our studio screen. Bear with me a moment. We're fine here. We'll be getting a call at 11 o'clock from none other than Ron Matten. He's a Yonkers politician. We're going to discuss some hyperlocal issues and concerns with him between 11 and 11:30. Okay, so let me just go back to a couple of other things. Okay, bear with me a moment here. Now this is a very interesting concept. One of our regular writers by the name of Bob Weir, he wrote an article in which he questions whether Well, the question is genital mutilation a form of child abuse? So he writes, what kind of a nation have we become when we need legislation to keep parents from having their kids surgically and chemically altered in order to change their gender? Hearing mothers and fathers say their little Johnny wants to become Janie because they saw him playing with a doll is a stunning example of the need for parental education. Even if you've never been a parent, it should be obvious that children are not mature enough to make that what is literally a life-changing experience. If an adult is incapable of providing sensible guidance to children, they are too dangerous to be in charge of them. Well, if your 8-year-old becomes fascinated with the animals at the zoo and decides to climb the fence into the lion's cage, do you give him a boost? Sadly, there are some parents who will use their children to advance their own radical notions of sexuality. Kids become lab experiments for those parents who blithely succumb to the whims of left-wing orthodoxy rather than protect them from the degeneracy that has corrupted our culture. And what does a child know about the complexity of his or her genetic structure? Moreover, are children capable of understanding the future ramifications of altering the natural processes that gave them life? Even the most casual observer of history would admit that the notion of gender-altering surgery would have been viewed as an abomination only a few decades ago. It's one thing to see men and women cross-dressing as an expression of a whimsical fantasy during a comedy skit, but when it begins to take a prominent role in our society, we should view it as an aberration, not as a roadmap to our future. Well, let's face it, when you look at Caitlyn Jenner, also known as Bruce Jenner, wearing a short skirt, high heels, and long blonde tresses, do you really see a woman? Or, unless your perceptions has been totally distorted by the constant barrage of Hollywood hedonism on steroids, to be seen is a man wearing women's clothing. Well, some of the most famous comics of the past would dress as women and prance around the stage to the uproarious laughter of their audience. The legendary Milton Berle, who dominated television in the 1950s as Uncle Milty, did a famous cross-dressing routine as Auntie Mildred. A couple of decades later, the great comic Flip Wilson dominated the Nielsen rating with his feminine doppelganger known as Geraldine. Well, the reason that audiences found those comedy routines so hilarious was because of the absurdity of seeing men prancing around as women. It wouldn't have been the least bit funny if those men had publicly stated that they truly believed in switching genders. Of course, that was a time in which we weren't being inundated daily with far-left propaganda machine that would be the envy of Joseph Goebbels. Or Goebbels is the way he's pronounced it in German. Anyway, nevertheless, it's one thing for adults to engage in fanciful notions of gender impairment, but it's quite another to impose those ideas on their naively impressionable and pre-adolescent progeny. A parent's role is not to submit to every impulse emanating from the frontal lobe of the brain in the early stages of logical reasoning. On the contrary, that's when a parent's guidance is most needed. Capitulation to childhood capriciousness is an abdication of one's role as a parent. Thankfully, in Texas, Attorney General Ken Paxton is prepared to fight against the practice of using transgender hormones and surgeries on children with, quote, gender dysphoria, end quote. He recently said, quote, we actually have started an investigation into looking at companies that sell, manufacture, and distribute these puberty blockers because we think there are serious issues affecting a minor's body at that age. Paxton, referring to the procedure as, quote, child abuse, end quote, added, quote, providing puberty blockers to young teens puts them at risk of infertility, heart attack, stroke, and other health concerns. Meanwhile, the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services has issued guidance that also categorizes, quote, genital mutilation as child abuse. Hopefully, the Attorney General's attention to this irrational stain on our culture will lead to legislation that will prevent future incongruities to emerge. Then, all it will need is Governor Abbott's signature, and we may be on the road back to a time when child rearing was not sacrificed on the altar of leftist folly. Well, just in case you didn't know, Bob Weir is a veteran of 20 years with the New York Police Department, 10 of which were performed in plain clothes undercover assignments. And Bob began a writing career about 16 years ago and had his first book published in 1999. He also became a syndicated columnist under the title Weir, W-E-I-R, Weir, Only Human. His name is Bob Weir, W-E-I-R. And he's been a writer for us for all those 16 years. And what an honor it's been. He's got a great perspective. People may agree or disagree, but it's a perspective. And he writes in a most lucid and exemplary manner. His language is on target. And you don't need to agree, but I think his voice needs to be heard. And that becomes very, very important. Okay, let me just quickly look at some other issues here. Oh, we've only got a few more minutes left before we speak to Ron Matten. So bear with me a moment. Just in case you haven't heard, tomorrow's the 11th of January. The Yonkers City Council meeting agenda has been slated for January 11th at 7 p.m. We have an attachment on the website that was issued by Narissa D. Pena. She's the second deputy city clerk in the city of Yonkers. But at 6 o'clock on the same day, the Yonkers Municipal Operations and Public Safety Committee meeting agenda, which is also slated for Tuesday, but at 6 p.m. is going to take place. This, too, also came from Narissa D. Pena, the second deputy city clerk. You can find both of the agendas on our website under legal notices found on the right-hand side of the page. And so that's the story there. Bear with me a moment as I look to something else before. One second. All right, well, one second. All right, one second. All right, so let's just see what we've got going on here. Wanted just to check a couple of other things before we get to our next caller who's already on the line. Good morning, Mr. Matten. What a pleasure. Thank you for hanging in there. Appreciate you calling in. How's it going?
Hezzy, this is not Ron. This is Mike Edelman. My phone was hacked by people in Altamont Springs, Florida. I ran to T-Mobile, which fortunately is only a couple minutes away, but they stole two phones. They got two new iPhones ordered to them on my account, and my SIM card was shut off when T-Mobile shipped the phones. I had to change all that. That's why I didn't call this morning. So I'm sure Ron is going to call you shortly.
Yeah, he will.
That's my story.
Well, thank God you're okay. I was worried. Well, at least you were able to manage all that, which is wonderful. But it is amazing. Hacking is happening all over the place. And the thing that I find offensive is that all these websites and all these companies, they keep telling us and imposing other restrictions and all ways of making sure that we're secure. You know, I've sometimes not even been able to get anywhere because the security systems are so overwhelming and I don't know where it's going. It's insane. Well, anyway, it looks like we lost you again. Not a problem. So we'll end up talking to you later on after 12. So we'll wait for a moment And we'll end up getting a hold of Ron Matten when he calls in. And so we'll see where that goes. Oh, goodness, goodness, goodness. All right. Yeah, he should be calling shortly. Who knows? Well, he hasn't called yet. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to look this up myself and see if we can get a hold of him. I hope, hopefully he hasn't been hacked either. Unbelievable. So we'll see what goes on. Okay. Oh, there he is. Hold on a minute while I get a hold of him. Good morning, Mr. Matten. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Hezzy. How have you been?
Okay. Well, it's always good to speak to you. It's what a mess today. You know, we were supposed to get a I got a call literally about a minute ago from Michael Edelman. Can you imagine his phone was hacked?
Oh,
thank
wow.
God he was able
to do that.
They can do it. It's amazing. And I'm constantly in shock every time I go on. There's a million and one ways. You have to show all kinds of security issues and overcome this and that and the other, all these challenges. And they claim everything is secure. But at the end of the day, nothing's secure. And you really wonder what these major firms are doing because they're not secure. The banks aren't secure. Nothing is secure. It's the biggest joke under the sun.
Yeah,
well, but anyway, I'm off my pedestal.
Okay.
So anyway, what's on your mind? What did you want to talk about today?
I wanted to talk about ethics. You've written a lot of articles recently concerning people's ethics, whether it be elected officials, business people within the community, or, so I just thought it'd kind of be good to first off review what it means to be an ethical person, how from our governor down to the New York City mayor, how their decisions have impacted ethics. And it's not really just about the actual whether or not a deed is ethically responsible, but really whether the optics of that deed appears to breach the ethics, and then society looks at that and has that distrust. And that even though the ethics may not have been breached because an ethical body or an ethics board has determined that you are within your right to do something, but whether you've actually breached an ethical standard because you made the appearance that the government looks less qualified. I know that's a roundabout way of saying that, sometimes perception clouds society's view of something. But we're in a very skeptical society at this point, and I think that people's actions need to appear beyond reproach, take that extra step. So I thought we could have a quick conversation about ethics, being that the last few editorials are involving either breaches in ethics or perceptions of breaches in ethics, whether it be campaign finance or appointments.
Right. Well, I think the one of the issues is that I guess while you were talking, I was thinking, maybe we should look up the word ethics. What does that mean? And one of the definitions is ethics or moral philosophy is a branch of philosophy that, quote, invokes systematizing, defending, and recommending concepts of right and wrong behavior. So the field of ethics, along with aesthetics, concerns matters of value, and these fields comprise the branch of philosophy called axiology. However, ethics may mean moral, morality, principles, honesty, integrity, value, honor, choice, what's right, what's wrong, what's fair, what's responsible, what's conscionable, or what isn't conscionable. I don't think we're studying ethics as much as, well, I'm an old man already, so I think that I came up with that. That may come from a religious perspective or from other perspectives, but I think that's the problem we have today. We don't really understand the definitions. There are ethical standards in business. There are ethical standards in politics. There are in relationships between people, you know, who may love one another. There are all kinds of issues, but we're devoid of what ethics are. We're not studying it.
It comes down, you know, the word is from the Greek ethos, meaning character.
Yes.
In Greek. So it comes down. It really comes down to somebody's character. And I think, you know, look, some people, there are lapses in ethics. Some people have lapses in judgment. It's always, mm-hmm. I always like to run my decisions by somebody, because we all get a little myopic, and we think that we're doing the best thing we can do. And particularly in Yonkers, you know, when you look at the broad range of lapses, even a small lapse is a lapse in ethics, but it may not seem that small across the larger picture when you see some of the things that people have been accused of. And again, accused. There are some things that people have been proving. You know, you can go back to the Ridge Hill, you know, the whole Ridge Hill scandal, which is, you know, everybody's done their time, everybody's paid their debt to society on that. But, you know, when you start looking at
reality, they didn't. You know, it's interesting. I went to a court case down in Foley Square in New York City, and there were people that were imprisoned because of it. And there were all kinds of allegations. But you know what's really fascinating? Talk about ethics. The people who were involved in Ridge Hill were the people from Forest City, Ratner. But Forest City Ratner, none of their people ever went to prison. That's because they were powerful people, and they knew people, and they were kept away and removed from the law, so the law couldn't touch them.
Plausible.
This is the atrocity. This is a question of ethics, and yet we don't reflect on that, and we believe that because a judge or a courtroom, because it wasn't the judge's fault. But the courtroom, because the judge never made a decision. It was a verdict by the jurors. So the point is, they never demanded that anybody from Forest City Ratner be put in prison. But they should have been, because they were the ones that created this mess.
We don't have an
ethical standard.
Or there's an ethical standard that's ignored.
Oh, I think you're right, and I stand corrected. Thank you very much. You're right. We ignore many, many issues and many standards when it suits us. And when it doesn't suit us, we impose it. Very, very smart, you know, definition on your part. Thank you.
I think and again, I think we all struggle. We look at the decision. Sometimes people base a decision on, is this for the greater good? And it still could be an ethical lapse.
Sometimes a greater good, there may be a greater good because of the numbers. So you may have, let's say, 75% of the people that might be involved should be recognized for whatever the intent is. And then you may also have 25% or even almost 50-50 that disagree. How do you balance the two by respecting both? and where are the ethical standards that allow you to meet the needs of some and also meet the needs of others without encroaching on the rights of others or the other side.
No, you're right, because it becomes so difficult for you to be the own arbiter of your lapse in ethics. I'm making action A for a particular reason because it'll provide me with benefit B. But again, people get myopic in what they do, and they may not see the external of their action because they haven't worked that into the equation. So, you know, you may think you're helping this group of people. Let's take affordable housing. That's been out there for a while. And yes, it's ethical. It's ethical to provide people housing. Absolutely. Some people may even call it a human right to have shelter. But when you make certain decisions and you do something because you want to, let's say, give the developers that opportunity, who may you hurt in that? Do you wind up hurting the taxpayers, or is somebody justifying a decision so somebody else can be enriched? And there are many layers on this that it's hard for somebody to judge their own ethical behavior because it does get to be somewhat myopic.
There are too many issues. Well, that's the complexity of life. You know, you may have a developer who may demand a certain amount of money to make a development at an affordable rate for people who deserve a place to live. The question is, what can you afford to pay? And does that mean that everybody has a right to have a two-bedroom apartment, you know, which they can't afford to pay? So, I don't know. It's a question of money. It's a question of integrity. It's a question of making money. It's a question of buying land. There's so many things that are complex about it. And like I know, for example, I was offended. I asked somebody for some support for something that I knew that they would have information about, and they said they would do it. And at the end, they never did. And I found it just, you know, I really didn't comprehend, like, what is it that they're trying to do? And I didn't want to feel offended by it. So I asked somebody that I think had a very, very solid, you know, ethical standard. And I didn't want to judge it on my own because I figured I was being clouded. So I asked them, and they gave me great advice. And I thought it was brilliant, and I'm going to follow through on their advice. But we don't always have that. Who do we go to? Should I call
when
I have an ethical issue? I mean, are you going to be comfortable with my question? I mean, I don't know.
So
vice versa?
As I said, earlier conversations, I'm Roman Catholic. You know, and a priest or a rabbi is not the worst place. Is not the worst place to seek guidance. We're all human beings, and we all are fallible. My Pope may not agree with that, but we all are fallible. And so there are who have a keener sense of right and wrong, and really I think that comes down to looking at the external actions, what we call externalities, of particular decisions. So if I choose to do something, is it going to harm others? I always look at whether or not the action I'm choosing enriches myself and takes a benefit away from somebody else. And that's kind of what I look I look to is whether or not what I'm doing is ethical. Sir, we're allowed to enrich ourselves. I mean, we all have to earn a living. But is something that I do going to hurt somebody else? And do I actually need that enrichment? Do I deserve that enrichment? So certainly I go to work.
You're talking about personal enrichment? So you're talking about personal enrichment?
Well, you know, when people violate ethics, it usually comes down to they're doing so for personal enrichment. I mean, occasionally people do it altruistically because they want to, they feel they can help a greater, do I steal COVID-19 vaccines because there's a group, or do I steal test kits because seniors in Yonkers are having trouble getting test kits? Well, it's still stealing, and I took from somebody else. So there's still an ethical lapse, even though you found very simply. You still had an ethical lapse. You stole something you hurt.
Well, that's the issue, though. You know, that's the question. That's a dilemma. However, do you need to steal in order to satisfy the needs of people who may have difficulty, or is there a way of ameliorating that in a different way without having to steal so that the whole concept can be mitigated from an ethical perspective? Like I know in Greenberg, for example, a lot of seniors have difficulty traversing the issue. They may not be able to go out because of the snow or their own personal frailty. And they have what they call these COVID-19 angels.
Yes.
And they're young people who actually help seniors to traverse the applications for whatever they need. And they do that on their computer for them. They can also show them how it's done, but they may not always get it. Sometimes I have to do something 20 times before I really get it. So it depends on your flexibility and your ability to pay attention. So there are ways to do it.
We don't always sit
back and say, well, what are the ramifications of my conduct?
So that goes back to that root word, ethos, the Greek meaning character.
Uh-huh.
When you teach people to care about others at a young age, and to put others above their own needs, that's when you start building that character. And I think when you have people volunteer to do good things, look, the military is a great organization. I know the idea of the military is to go out and defend a country, but when you are in the military, particularly when you're in boot camp, you are taught that unit cohesivity trumps your own personal need, and that you're there for others and not for yourself. So service, that you're taught that very early on, and those are the character building things that I think we've missed. Let's say in the last 20 to 30 years, where we haven't had many adversities and we're used to instant gratification and what can I have now in the newest iPhone and all these things on the disposable. I think throughout, the 1980s, let's call it the last 40 years.
I would go for 40.
Yeah, we've talked more about satisfying ourselves than meeting the needs of others. And I'm not saying the government needs to do that. I'm saying people should be looking to at least find some way of serving others as a way of building your own character, as a way of not putting yourself first. And I think that's when you start to develop an ethical standard, is when you can take yourself out of the equation and think about how your decisions impact others without yourself.
Well, I would definitely concur. Except I remember you've heard of what's her name? There's a woman that put together some sort of business. I forgot. I her name is Vernon. She took the name from Mount Vernon, and she sold all kinds of stuff through a catalog. I don't know if it was
Lillian Vernon.
Yeah, I once heard her at some dissertation, and I went to her and I said, she sounded very ethical to me on many, many levels. And I went to her and I said, where did you learn your ethical standards? And she said she just did. And I understood that was the case because I learned it also that way. It wasn't that I went to classroom for it. I was taught it at home. And that's the way it was. And so I grew up with that aspect in me. And I used to remember sometimes, because I used to travel a great deal, I would try to do all kinds of things because I figured, hey, nobody would see me, and I could do whatever I wanted. You know, it was like a freedom. You know, I was no longer at home. Nobody would be able to see what I've done. And then I stopped myself because I said, this is wrong. And it's just amazing, you know, how you conduct your life. But we don't have that training anymore. We don't teach it in school. We don't teach it at home. And it's very, very hard to get anywhere today. And we're really deficient when it comes to ethics. And we don't really know what ethics are anymore.
Yeah, I actually remember Lillian Vernon. I worked for Westchester Association for Retarded Citizens when I came out of the Navy. And Lillian Vernon donated a lot to the organization, and I think we did a lot of work, piecemeal work for them, because in our workshops with our clients.
Right.
So, yeah, I remember she was actually born in Leipzig, Germany.
That's right. That's right, Leipzig.
And, yeah, that's where my mother was born. Same.
Uh-huh. My uncle, may rest in peace, was born in Leipzig.
Okay. So you have your origins in what they call Ostes, East Germany.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's important. It's important to do a gut check regularly. It's easy. Mm-hmm. It's easy to, as I said, get myopic and not really think, I was raised, as I said, a Catholic, and the nuns used to call it, you know, being Christ-like, you know, think back. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's another word for it, grace, you know, where somebody has grace, in that they're able to...
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with Christ-like. You know, maybe that's one of the problems. I think we've lost a sense of connection to our house of worship, whatever it may be. And I think that also has diminished our capacity to recognize what is or is not ethical. Because the teachings of the church and the teaching of synagogues and there's a lot of stuff that I also believe is in the Quran, they do teach you things, and there are standards that are worthwhile contemplating, and they're not so dissimilar on many levels.
No,
it's,
they're not.
It's the way we actually meter it out that may or may not be detrimental to an understanding. And we don't talk. That's another thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, I'm not offended when somebody tells me, well, this is the Christian way. Not a problem for me.
No, and there's a lot of overlap. I think I'm trying to remember this. The law of Maimonides. I think it's am I correct with that? There are ethical standards within the law of Maimonides that basically say to do no harm to others. It's Maimonides' laws on charity. I believe that's it.
Yeah.
And You know, the highest form of charity you can give to somebody is giving them a job. But again, those are all ethical standards. One of the laws is it was originally to do no harm to other Jews. It's been now universalized to be to do no harm to others. And so, yeah.
Well, Maimonides was a Jew.
Right. But religion is a great place to find ethics, particularly the latter day religions, where I think we've grown. I think the religions have really grown to be more universal now than they were, 200 years ago.
Yeah, I think so. Well, because we were in our own little world. We were separated from one another, so there was no discourse. We didn't know the other, quote-unquote, the other, whoever they were. And so that lack of interaction also, I guess, gave us a concept that they were the bad ones, whoever they were. And so, and that we find that today, too, in our society. We blame this one for one thing or another, for all kinds of rationale. Doesn't necessarily make it true. And if we would speak to one another, we might find that there's some greater commonality, and that would be a wonderful way to bring our nation together, too.
Yeah, I think, at least in the three Abrahamic religions, there is commonality. You can bring, my wife is Buddhist. There's a lot of overlap from my religion.
Oh, absolutely.
To Buddhism. And Hinduism, there's also
and
a
Hinduism
lot of
too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think you can find those things where we all share, and they bring us together more than they separate us.
Yeah.
I became
it's interesting. I remember. Go ahead. You became what?
I was just saying I became a much better Catholic working for a Orthodox Jewish school. Only because I was able to see the dedication of people when they would daven, and that kind of got me going back to church a little bit,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that's missing, but then quite often houses of worship, they may change their perspective on particular issues, which divides the flock. And that starts to create other issues where people no longer go to their house of worship. There's a tremendous amount of apostasy, is that the right word, where people leave their religion. And we see more and more of that today.
Mm. Yeah,
I'm not
I think
suggesting
people like
that people need to be so religious, but I think that there are aspects of religion that we should not throw out, as if it was, dirty water. There are things that we should believe in, and we can believe in, but we forgot it all because we're no longer in touch.
Right. You don't need to have blinders on and just basically adhere to your religion, without a question. That's I think not what we're both saying. But you do need something to ground you in ethics. Whether or not you can write a book and get a $5 million advance, you should know that that's not ethical. Whether or not you're the governor or you're just somebody serving in an administrative role.
Right.
Same thing comes down to,
Same thing comes down to what?
To whether you're a city official hiring a relative, or whether you're a city official, giving a friend a leg up on an exam.
All right.
Those are
we all know it.
Right. Oh, yeah, but that's all abuse, whether you're getting the book advance or whether you're getting a relative of job. Those are all abuses of power. You've taken the trust that you have in your office.
But a lot of people don't see all of that. They don't. A lot of that never comes out. So it's hard to tell, and therefore a lot of people are not informed about what goes on behind the scenes. So you know, when they say things like "it's not what you know, it's who you know," yeah, that's very true. And no matter what community and what society, what country you look at, that's a given. It's not who you it's who you know, not what you know. You could have an unbelievable degree. It means nothing unless you know somebody.
Right. It's all coming out now that our former governor was one of the worst abusers of his position for his own benefit. Whether the the allegations of touching, groping, bullying subordinates. And it really just took.
Well, evidently that wasn't able to get traction with the law because they're dismissing all those issues against him. And so the former Governor Cuomo is just not going to serve any time for any of this. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to be hurt by it emotionally. And we haven't moved the equation forward, which is probably more important than whether he goes to prison or not. So if the law can't do anything about it, but we're not having a discussion about the ethics of it all. Right. We haven't taught men how to treat women. We haven't explained all of this, and we need to. And that's a failing
you're
of ethics.
You're absolutely right. There's no way that you have the rights or you have the liberties. I'll say you don't own those liberties on other people that our former governor has taken. And I really think that it's politically expedient that the investigations are ended now, before we get into a governor's race and midterm elections. And that's probably why we're not seeing any charges or anything brought, because he would certainly fight those charges.
I concur.
And this would be dragged out, and it would not be good for those who are in power now, because there are probably other people who will fall, who have been a party to it, who have seen it and closed their eyes, and they don't want that. They don't want that to be known.
Well, I remember there was a story, and I was enamored by this one senator who ended up being engaged. It was Kirsten Gillibrand from New York. And she ended up promoting something that was happening, which I thought was a very important ethical issue, and that was the sexual assault that was happening in the military. And when I originally heard about it, I said, well, I guess, you know, there must be a lot of assault of women by the men in the military. And then I also learned that on top of that, there were also men in the military that were sexually abusing other men in the military. And I said, you know, this is outrageous what's going on. And there are countries around the world who have advised, and this is maybe not an ethical ethics, but it is a standard in militaries, that if you're caught doing anything like that, you're court-martialed. You're going to spend the rest of your life in prison, which is a good reason for not to do it. So whether you want to show your power over a woman rather than a sexual, relationship with a woman that's acceptable to her as well as to you, so it's really a power trip over the other who's being sexually assaulted, whether it be a man against a man or a woman against a woman or a man against a woman or a woman against a man. There are all kinds of crazy things that people do. However,
it can be outlawed, but you dropped it. 6 years later, a waste of time, and I was totally disgusted. There's nothing this woman can do now, in my eyes, that will ever mitigate her atrocity and her lack of ethical standards. For 6 years, she milked this thing. I was disgusted. And I know, for example, just one example, in Holland, it's not permitted. It's just not permitted. And there are other countries as well. There's no need to name them all.
Yeah,
but
no,
it
does get difficult because of the structure in the military, and you know, there's also at least again, I'm drawing on 35 years ago experience, not the modern,
right.
Not the military we have today, but you know, hazing is very much accepted, almost a rite of passage, in the Navy, it's common when you cross the equator. There's this whole...
And also the colleges, too.
Rituals, yeah. It's common in colleges and frat house, and there's kind of a rite of passage. And I think it tends to make us less compassionate about other people because, you know, well, the idea is that you'll get to hate somebody else afterwards. It just leaves a bad taste in my mouth regarding humanity.
Yeah.
Is that if we want to inflict pain on other people, so anyway,
we have that because a lot of people get accused of something that they did, which never happened, and a system can intrude and cause pain.
That. Right, that does happen too, and there are false accusations, and we should not forget that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an accusation does not mean that somebody's automatically guilty. But, you know, a number of accusations that come up, accusers don't like to put themselves also through the crosshairs. You know,
right.
Some do for financial or notoriety gain, but largely people don't want to be known as being abused. And they also don't want to take the heat on that. So, I don't think false accusations happen as often as we think, but they do happen.
Very good point. I didn't realize that I've overstepped my bounds time-wise. So,
yeah. Well, it's always a pleasure. Your audience. I'm just myself. I just came off of COVID restrictions last week. Quarantine. So I did get infected. I thought I had followed safe protocols of masking and everything else. So it's just really important to mask and keep your distance as we get through the Omicron variant. Luckily, Omicron was only like a bad cold. It wasn't totally debilitating, but.
The truth is, we don't know what the long term effect of Omicron will be.
That's true.
There is long haul disease for people who got the original Delta, and they didn't find out for 3 to 6 months later that they're totally debilitated. And there's now a new variant that was discovered in Cyprus. Called which combines the efficacy of Delta and Omicron's capacity as well, and they're calling that Deltacron. So we'll see if it's worse. Mutations are taking place.
Hopefully, having one or the other has given you some immunity to Deltacron.
Well, we'll see. Let's hope. Anyway, so that's
Hezzy,
the story.
Best of health. Please
have a great week. You
and
too.
I'll see, I'll
Thank you for the conversation.
Much. Thank you.
Be well.
Bye.
Bye. Well, there we have it, folks. None other than I'm losing my mind. Ron Matten. I'm sorry. I'm thinking too far ahead. That's the problem. I can't do two things at once. So only one thing at a time. So Ron Matten, he's a politician in the city of Yonkers, and just always a worthy discussion with him. Very esoteric discussion today. So hopefully it was meaningful to our listeners, and that would be nice. Well, let me go back to our studio screen. And we have about 19 minutes or so. So let me just check to see what's going on the world stage and share that with you as well. Bear with me a moment here. I don't know about you guys, but I've certainly found that there are issues on the internet of late, and it's just not functioning the way it used to. I don't know why. Okay, just bear with me a moment here. All right, 1 second. Oh, 1 minute here. One second. All right, let me see if we can pull this up. This is very interesting. This is going to be a... I think we just may have enough time to listen to this. And this is about the risks of socioeconomic disorganization due to Omicron variant. And it's going to be with Dr. Arthur Minsat. So let's listen to
new
this.
Healing
one split
here,
second.
So you can feel relief.
All right. 1 minute. We're going to be able to move. Yeah. This is a report from France 24.
To Arthur Minsat, senior economist at the OECD Development Center. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Minsat. How has Omicron affected the international economy, specifically the transport and health sectors?
The Omicron led the OECD to revise downward its global growth estimates for 2021, down from 5.6% in December from 5.7% in our initial forecast in September. There is a gulf between supply and demand leading to rampant inflation, which we estimate at 4.4% for 2022, and we expect this inflation to level off by the end of 2022. But there's very high inflation in some countries like the U.S., where it has hit almost 7%. So central banks are to wait for supply tensions to diminish and signal that they will act if necessary. And there's a big risk for developing economies, emerging economies in particular, where a tapering of quantitative easing when the situation eases could bring capital outflows to safer markets or a hike in interest rates.
Dr. Minsat, the biggest impact for economies, however, has been the high level of absenteeism among employees. But to what degree has that impacted countries around the world?
This is another major impact, is the labor shortage. Some, in particular for small and middle-sized enterprises, in the United States, for instance, 60% of small enterprises don't find applicants for jobs. So there's a big gap there, and which is widespread in the global economy. Supply disruption are huge, particularly in the automobile sector, that knocked off 1.5% of the size of the German economy, 0.5% in Mexico, or the Czech Republic, or Japan. So there are huge gaps there also in the health sector, transportation, aviation, and tourism, of course.
Now, governments across the world have increased expenditure as they seek to attempt to, rather, to keep afloat sectors badly impacted by the pandemic. But at the end of the day, what impact will that have on the global economy itself?
The biggest challenge is that no one of us are safe until all of us are safe. Now, if we look at the share of people who have fully vaccinated. In France, we have 73% of the population is fully vaccinated. Worldwide, it's about 49%, almost half of it. But in Africa, it's only 9%. So there's a big gap here. And when we look at how much money is spent, the G20 economies, so 20 largest economies in the world, spent $10 trillion for the economic recovery. But it would cost $50 billion to vaccinate the whole planet. And that would impede the spread of further variants like the Omicron. 41 countries didn't vaccinate 10% of the population. So that's a big risk for the global health and the spread of the pandemic. And when we look at the Omicron, 120 million booster doses were received in the last 4 months in OECD countries. But when we look at least income, lowest income countries, they received only 60 million doses, so about half of it. So this is one of the issues we've been highlighting at the OECD Development Center, including through our high-level meeting that was taking place.
Dr. Minsad, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, bear with me one moment. I thought this was 17 minutes, evidently not, which is fine. And bear with me a moment here. So I'm going to find out. One moment. One second here. All right, one moment. Yeah, this is really very important. Evidently, there are no concessions and no breakthroughs with respect to Russia and the U.S., who are starting now to begin difficult talks on the Ukraine. So Russia said on Sunday it would not make concessions under U.S. pressure and warned that this week's talks on the Ukraine crisis might end early, while Washington said no breakthroughs were expected and progress depended on de-escalation from Moscow. Well, the hard line from Moscow underscored the fragile prospects for negotiations that Washington hopes will avert the danger of a new Russian invasion of Ukraine at the tensest point in U.S.-Russia relations since the Cold War ended 3 decades ago. Talks begin on Monday in Geneva before moving to Brussels and Vienna, but the state-owned RIA news agency quoted Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov as saying it was entirely possible that diplomacy could end after a single meeting. Quote, I can't rule out anything. This is an entirely possible scenario, and the Americans should have no illusions about this, he was quoted as saying. Naturally, we will not make any concessions under pressure, and quote unquote, or amid constant threats from participants in the talks, said Ryabkov, who will lead the Russian delegation in Geneva. Moscow was not optimistic going to the talks. Interfax news agency from Russia quoted Ryabkov as saying, quote, the U.S. prognosis was similarly gloomy. I don't think we're going to see any breakthrough in the coming week, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said in a CNN interview. In response to Russian demands for Western security guarantees, the United States and allies have said they are prepared to discuss the possibility of each side restricting military exercises and missile deployments in the region. Well, both sides will put proposals on the table and then see if there are grounds for moving forward, Blinken had said. To make actual progress is very hard to see that happening when there's an ongoing escalation, when Russia has a gun to the head of Ukraine with 100,000 troops near its borders, Blinken said in an interview with ABC News. Ahead of the formal talks, U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman met with Ryabkov on Sunday in Geneva and told him Washington, quote, would welcome genuine progress through diplomacy, as the State Department had said. Well, Lyapkov told reporters his meeting with Sherman had been, quote, complex but businesslike, end quote. Russian news agency Interfax had said that. Well, tens of thousands of Russian troops are gathered within reach of the border with Ukraine in preparation for what Washington and Kiev say could be an invasion 8 years after Russia ceded the Crimea Peninsula from Ukraine. Well, the comments from Russia's Lyapkov, who has compared the situation to the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis when the world stood on the brink of nuclear war, were constant, with an uncompromising line Russia had been signaling for weeks. Russia denies invasion plans and said it is responding to what it calls aggressive and provocative behavior from the NATO military alliance and Ukraine, which has tilted toward the West and aspires to join NATO. And then further complicating the picture, Russia sent troops into neighboring Kazakhstan last week after the oil-producing former Soviet republic was hit by a wave of unrest. Russia's foreign ministry reacted furiously on Saturday to a jibe by Blinken that, quote, once Russians are in your house, it's sometimes very difficult to get them to leave. Last month, Russia presented a sweeping set of demands, including for a ban on further NATO expansion and an end to the alliance's activity in Central and Eastern European countries that joined in after 1997. The United States and NATO have dismissed large parts of the Russian proposals as non-starters. The United States was not willing to discuss pulling some troops out of Eastern Europe or rule out expanding NATO to include Ukraine, Blinken had said. To abandon its demands for a more limited agenda would be a major climb down that Russia seems unlikely to make, especially after weeks of troop movements near Ukraine and a series of tough statements from President Vladimir Putin. Well, the Kremlin leader has said that after successive waves of NATO expansion, it is time for Russia to enforce its red lines, quote unquote, and ensure the alliance does not admit Ukraine or station weapon systems there that would target Russia. Well, Ukraine won a NATO promise in 2008 that it would be allowed to join one day, but diplomats say there is no question of that happening anytime soon. NATO said it is a defensive alliance and Moscow had nothing to fear from it. That is far from Putin's worldview, which sees Russia as under threat from hostile Western powers, he says, have repeatedly broken promises given as the Cold War ended not to expand toward its borders. The United States and its allies dispute such pledges were given. In two conversations over the past 5 weeks, U.S. President Joe Biden warned Putin that Russia would face unprecedented economic sanctions in the event of further aggression against Ukraine. The group of seven nations and the European Union have joined in threatening, quote, massive consequences, end quote. Putin said it would be a colossal mistake that would lead to a complete rupture of relations. In addition to the Geneva talks, Russia is also due to hold negotiations with NATO in Brussels on Wednesday and at the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe in Vienna on Thursday. So that's a story there, and that's where things reside. Unbelievable. So let me quickly go back to our studio screen. Let me just quickly look at our calendar. Tomorrow's Tuesday, so we're going to be speaking to, bear with me a moment, let me look at my calendar. One second. One second here. Yeah, it is Tuesday, so we're going to be speaking to... Yes, we're going to be speaking to Jeff Swartz and Brendan Beery. These two guys will talk to us from 10 to 11 in the morning. And their focus is the Constitution. And so we're going to talk to them. And then we're also going to be speaking to Christine Finnegan. I have to look her up because I don't remember exactly. One second. No, I think I got the wrong week. Forgive me. One second. Yeah, I did get the wrong week. Okay, so tomorrow we're going to be speaking to Brendan Beery and Jeff Swartz from 10 to 11. And then at 11 o'clock, we're going to speak to Michael Letts. He's the... he's just been involved with the Invest USA. They buy vests for police officers around the country that cannot be pierced by bullets. They run between $750 to $1,000 a unit, no less. And the police don't include that as part of their engagement of police officers. So somebody like this 501c3 that Mr. Letts has put together, he's also a chaplain from Columbia, South Carolina, so who's in charge. So that's the story. And then at 11:30, we're going to be speaking to Bob Marone, and we'll see what's going on in his world. So that's the story at our end. And I hope to speak to you then tomorrow. So be well, and let me get back to my studio screen so we could say goodbye and end the broadcast. Where are we? Okay, here we are. And we'll say goodbye. Take care. Thank you. Bye.